crossing party lines. Good morning. We're live from Studio 5, and this is First Coast Connect. I'm Melissa Ross. Thanks for being here. And just ahead, why mayoral candidate Anna Brochet is trying to get the support of Duval Democratic voters next month, as the local GOP says she's disloyal. We're talking about the Jacksonville mayor's race right now, and you can get on the line now, 549-2937. Then later, it's special memories of the Mercury 7 astronauts in Florida in our book club, plus local musician Yuno, who's topping playlists across America from right here in Duval. We'll meet him and take a listen. All of that ahead this morning, but first this hour, mayoral candidate Anna Brochet has hired a top Democratic strategist in the Jacksonville mayor's race as she seeks to build a bipartisan coalition to knock out incumbent Lenny Curry. That led the local GOP chair yesterday to accuse Brochet, a Republican, of being disloyal to her own party. The Brochet campaign fired back, pointing out the upcoming election is a unitary election where voters can cross party lines. Scott Arsenault is president of Arsenault Strategies and former head of the Florida Democratic Party. He's helping the Brochet campaign with outreach to Democratic voters. And he joins us now with more. Good morning, Scott.
Good morning, Melissa. Thanks for having me on this morning.
And whether you're Democratic, Republican, or Independent, we want your calls about the Jacksonville mayor's race. Who will you vote for? What are your thoughts about this unitary election? It's 549-2937. That's 549-2937. Or go online, send your emails to firstcoastconnect@wjct.org, tweets to @MelissaInJax, or weigh in on Facebook. All right, so you're the former chair of the Florida Democratic Party, and you joined the Anna Brochet campaign for mayor as a consultant. She's a Republican trying to run against and take out another Republican. Why does Anna Brochet need you, Scott, in this race?
Well, again, thanks for having me on. And I was the executive director of the party for 10 years, not the chair. I had three great chairs.
Sorry, I mistitled you there. Executive director.
And Anna really doesn't need me. She's running a great campaign. She's doing exactly what you need to do in a campaign, which is to reach out to all voters, which I think is what's a little bit funny about what the Duval Republican Party said yesterday. She's got a campaign where she's talking to Republicans and, shockingly enough, Democrats and NPAs to try to build the kind of coalition she needs to do to win. That's what candidates are supposed to do. And I think that's also what people are very frustrated with our politics today is candidates who don't do that, who are super hyper-partisan. And that's certainly what this mayor's race shouldn't be about.
It is a unitary election. You can vote for whichever candidate you like on March 19th. Now, yesterday, the chair of the Republican Party of Duval County, Dean Black, issued a statement saying that Brochet is being disloyal to the Republican Party and has actually turned on her own party, he says. And he cited hiring you as part of this. What's your reaction to that? And by the way, we asked Dean Black to appear on this program, have not heard back. But what's your reaction?
Well, I appreciate getting a mention from the Duval Republican Party, so that was fun. But the reaction is that the only real loyalty that matters is to the voters. And that's what matters in this election, what matters to Anna. This should not be about a pledge to either party. It's about a pledge to the people. And that's the kind of campaign she's running. And I think that's what's important here.
Let me ask you about the fact that she's trying to court prominent Democrats across the city, including elected officials. At the same time, Mayor Curry has a prominent Democrat, Councilman Tommy Hazzuri, appearing in television ads for him. Mm-hmm. So we see in this local election quite a bit of blurring of party lines. It is a unitary election. And so it's not as though we're having a primary and then a general election. More bipartisan concerns are sort of on the table here in this race. So for people that are weighing who to vote for in the mayor's race, and they have concerns about public safety, jobs, and the economy, why is your candidate a better choice than the incumbent, Mayor Curry?
Sure. And we don't have a Democrat on the ballot this time, which I think may be the first time since consolidation that we've had it this way. So I know that's confusing for a lot of people that are trying to sort through. But let me talk a little bit of why I think, you know, Anna Broche is the clear and away the best candidate in this race, and certainly better than the incumbent Mayor Curry. I mean, this race is a lot about integrity, about promises made and promises kept. Lenny Curry ran 4 years ago against Mayor Brown on a platform of crime, reducing crime, saying that Mayor Brown had failed and that Lenny Curry would have the solution. Well, that's not the case. What we've seen in the last 4 years is crime is on the rise. Violent crime is on the rise. Just last month in January, we had our bloodiest month on record. And that's a real tragedy. There's a crisis in this city. And Anna Broche is at the best position to really address the crime problem here in Jacksonville in a way that this administration has failed.
And what would she do differently?
Sure. Well, it starts with the fact that, you know, putting more police on the street is a great first step. I think everybody supports that, and we need to make sure that we're retaining and recruiting the best officers we can. But it's got to go beyond that. That's where this administration has failed. We've got to be addressing, for example, mental health. The Duval County Jail is the largest mental health provider in the city. That's just not right. That's not how this way. That's not a way to reduce violent crime. After school programs, going to those communities that are where you have the most at-risk youth and making sure they have programs that keep them off the streets. A full community approach, which we're lacking here in Jacksonville, and where the current mayor has failed.
Now, as you said, there's no Democrat running in this race. You led the state Democratic Party. What's your strategy to reach out to Duval County Democrats who will see a couple of Republicans to choose from at the top of the ballot, along with some independent candidates? How can Anna Broche, a moderate Republican, convince Democrats to pull the lever for her, since they don't have a D on the ballot this time?
Well, one thing, I'm lucky that Anna is one of the hardest working candidates I've had the pleasure of working with. I mean, she's running a very grassroots campaign. And for Democrats, that's about her out there, you know, meeting them where they live. I mean, she's going to churches and community centers, senior centers all across the city. She has been for weeks. She's meeting large groups of Democrats. We're able to pull them together. She's doing the hard work necessary to reach out and make sure Democrats know her and know what she stands for. And she's doing a great job of that.
Let me ask you as a follow-up. We're learning this morning that State Attorney Melissa Nelson won't file charges against anyone on the Jacksonville City Council after an investigation into potential violations of the Florida Sunshine Law. Mm-hmm. Councilwoman Broche and other members of the city council were being looked at for potentially improper, private, off-the-record communication. There will be no charges, but it's being reported that there was questionable communication among these public officials. And so that's something certainly that Councilwoman Broche will have to answer to on the campaign trail. Mm-hmm. In particular, the perception that she was communicating quite a bit with Democrats on the city council, possibly about this mayor's race. So what's your reaction to this announcement?
Well, the state's attorney investigated and found nothing wrong. I mean, that's my first reaction, is that no one did anything here improper. This was a politically motivated complaint. The mayor's office engineered it. They filed it. They pursued it. This was all an attempt to attack the people who opposed the mayor on council. And it's really, you know, apropos of his leadership in the city, of bullying council members who don't agree with him, bullying people who don't support him. That's what this whole investigation, which has turned into what we thought it would be, which is nothing, is all about. The fact that they would now say, oh, well, there was no wrongdoing, but perhaps they were just talking a lot. Well, you know, maybe they're friends. Maybe they served together on a body. Maybe they talk on the phone. And the fact that she's talking to Democrats, again, isn't that what we want our politicians to do, is to talk to people across the aisle? That's what she's, you know, been doing. This whole investigation is a whole lot of nothing. And Melissa Nelson said pretty much that yesterday.
Well, she said no charges, but that there was some questionable activity. Now, certainly, to be fair, the Florida Sunshine Law is among the strictest in the nation, and this isn't the first time local officials have kind of run afoul of its very strict requirements about how they communicate with their colleagues. Let's just make sure people understand that as well. And let's go to some calls now for Scott Arsenault, former executive director of the Florida Democratic Party. Got it right this time. Now a consultant to the Anna Brochet campaign for mayor, as Brochet, a Republican, seeks to build Democratic support around Duval County. The mayor's race is coming up in just a few days, over a month. Who will get your vote? What are your questions about this race? Your comments? It's 549-2937 to call us up right now. We'll go to your tweets and emails in a moment. Tom is in Atlantic Beach. Hey, Tom, good morning. How are you?
Good morning. How are you? Just wanted to comment on the attack by Mr. Black on Anna Brochet for reaching across party lines. I mean, I think that's what we would want, is a mayor to serve the entire city, not just pockets of the city, as is currently being done. And it seems very much a hypocrisy that you have Tommy Hazzuri endorsing Mayor Curry and then having the chairman attack Anna Brochet. In Tommy Hazzuri's statements about Lenny Curry reaching across party lines, I'd like to see something that actually demonstrates that. If it were true, it'd be one thing. But when you have a mayor that fires 100% of the Democrats as soon as he takes office on all the community boards, it just doesn't speak of partisan or nonpartisan politics. So just like to hear your thoughts on that.
Okay, thanks for that. And we have emails about that, too, pointing out that the mayor has asked Tommy Hazzuri to appear in ads with him, and he's received his endorsement. Certainly the mayor has to lead the entire city, people of all backgrounds and political persuasions. Mayor Curry used to head the state Republican Party, so he was your counterpart, Scott, in a sense. His goal before becoming mayor of Jacksonville was to get as many Republicans elected as possible. He was certainly a sharp partisan. He has taken criticism in office for governing in a really partisan way as a Republican, although he certainly also has a lot of support from local Republicans. Anna Brochet bringing you on board is certainly the most bipartisan move I think a candidate for mayor has made in some time in Jacksonville. What do you think it says about just the way the electorate is evolving in this county? You also worked, I believe, on the Andrew Gillum campaign for governor. Gillum won Duval County. He turned it blue, which was really remarked upon at the time. And so what lessons did you take from that campaign that I guess you're trying to apply to this campaign?
Sure. And to build on Tom's point, I mean, we do have a history here in Jacksonville with, you know, Mayor Delaney and Mayor Payton, Mayor Brown, of bipartisan leadership or nonpartisan governance in the mayor's office that Lenny Curry rejected when he came in. And to Tom's point, his first move was, frankly, to get rid of all the Democrats. So people should not forget that. And he's brought a partisanship to this office that wasn't there before. What strikes me about Anna Brochet is that she's committed to going back to a style of nonpartisan leadership of the city that is really what has done us in good stead for the last, for literally a generation now. To your question about I worked with Andrew Gillum. It was a great race. We did really well here in Duval County. And that's because, the county is changing a lot over really the last decade. It is getting younger. It is getting more diverse. Many of our areas of the town that are growing, like San Marco or Five Points, Avondale. I mean, the downtown is now, people are coming back to live there. We were able to just kind of reach out and tap into those new constituencies here in the city that weren't there a decade ago. Or really even almost 5 years ago, and get them excited and get them to the polls. And that's really what I believe Anna's going to do here as well, is speak to all parts of the city. We have a much different city than we did even 20 years ago.
How are you going to get people excited to go to the polls? And this is a question for the Curry campaign, too. And we have reached out to them as well and invited the mayor to appear on this program. But how are you going to get people excited to come out and vote in March when they just went out and voted in November?
Well, Melissa, here's a great thing about the last 2 years in not just in Jacksonville or Florida, but the country. People are much more politically active and motivated than they were 2 years ago or 3 years ago. I saw it last year during the governor's race. I've seen it in local races, even in special elections. People want to go vote. They want to get politically active, and that's really on both sides, and it's a great thing. And I believe that this race for mayor, because of the really around crime and the problems that we're having here, there seems to be a murder almost every day. There's a crisis in Jacksonville. People are focused on this mayor's race. They're focused on politics. And I think that's going to motivate people to come out to vote. And we're going to have a really high turnout in March.
It's 549-2937. Give us a call. William is in Murray Hill. Hey, good morning, William.
Good morning, Ms. Melissa. For the gentleman, I wanted to ask him, I heard him say she would be reaching out to the churches and stuff. And in the black community, there's a lot of, voter apathy because we, vote for people over and over and nothing changes. So I was wondering, most of the time you usually could go to the black church, but the young blacks and a lot of blacks, we don't really attend church. So I'm trying to see, because the current mayor, he's for the mayor of across the river there, basically. And it's a tale of two cities. But well, to be brief, if our community, particularly the black community, the kids and stuff, they don't go to church anymore, whatever. Is she going to do a boots on the ground type of thing to, reach our community and mobilize them? Because we are dealing with a little apathy, and that Mike Williams, when he walked through that black community on East Side the other day and that old man approached him, that's the frustration we're feeling. So that's my question was how would, she plans on doing that? Because she can win if she gets the black vote, sir.
Thanks for that question, William and Murray Hill. Yeah, let me ask you about that. What is the Brochet campaign strategy to reach out and engage African-American voters in Duval County, as William said, who are disillusioned and frustrated and have long been disappointed in city leadership on a number of levels?
Well, absolutely. And thank you, William, for the call. And William's absolutely right that the current mayor, Mayor Curry, has ignored his community, has ignored his neighborhoods and frankly, left them behind. Anna is, as I mentioned, she's going to churches, but she's also going to barbershops and beauty shops and community centers. And she's going to every part of the city, including the north side and the east side, not just the south side. She's everywhere, really. And that's our strategy, is to make sure that to go out into the community, go to Murray Hill, meet with voters. She was there this past weekend. We're gonna use the traditional methods. We'll be on radio. We're in people's mailboxes already. We're doing the paid communication. But more importantly, Anna is out in these communities. I suspect William will see her physically over the next 5 weeks as she meets directly with voters, and particularly voters in the African American community who don't have a mayor right now that represents them.
Well, you mentioned a minute ago that Anna Brochet would do more than just putting more police on the streets in terms of making communities safer. How will she pay for that? This city, as yet, has not decided to set up a dedicated funding source for crime reduction and neighborhood improvement that can go from throughout many mayoral administrations. We had the Jacksonville Journey that got defunded over time. So how would her approach to really shoring up these neighborhoods be paid for?
Well, Anna's a CPA and a very good one at that. And she's going to, there's money in this budget, and she's going to go through it and make sure and find it and get the money necessary. These aren't going to be huge ticket items, but there is money out there once you start looking into this budget that we have currently that can go, this is about a little more priorities. Are we funding the priorities that matter? And I think public safety and attacking the root causes of crime, not just when you lock a person up, that's great. That puts that person off the street, but those crimes have already been committed. I mean, have you gone in and tried to prevent those from ever happening? I mean, that's what we've got to get to, and that's where we've got to make sure we're putting the money that we do have you know, into.
Lots of tweets coming into the show. Pagin tweets the show. She's a volunteer, I believe, for the Brochet campaign. But she tweets, why does the Republican Party have so few women running for office? They are treated as less than. Women are rarely supported by the local party. Members who spew disgusting philosophies about women are not reprimanded. And she attached a tweet from someone saying women need to be in a subservient position and that Brochet is a demon incarnate. Okay, so what about that? Is your campaign trying to reach out to moderate Republican women and moderate independent women and really talking about the gender aspect of this race? If Brochet is elected, she would make history as the city's first female mayor.
Absolutely. Again, listen, we're reaching out to all the voters. The fact that, yes, Anna is a woman, she would be our first woman mayor. I think that speaks particularly to women who are now getting active in politics in a way that they didn't 2 years ago. We were just talking about that. And I think mainly that new political participation is being driven by women. So Anna's campaign in and of itself will speak to them. And I believe we'll reach them. Is she running a female-centric campaign? No. She's running a campaign that's talking to everybody. And I think that's what sets her apart from her opponent, Mayor Curry, who's really only talking to one sliver of the electorate. And that's what I think why Anna's going to win, because she's going to talk to every voter, and I think she can motivate every voter.
Here's another tweet from Travis. It's hypocritical of Lenny Curry, Dean Black, and the Duval GOP to ask Tommy Hazuri to appear in ads for the mayor and welcome Congressman Al Lawson to their side, but then blast Anna Brochet for hiring a Democrat to her campaign. Don't we want a mayor who listens to all constituents? Bill tweets the show, people should be able to vote across party lines to support candidates, but Democrats' failure to run a candidate shows a serious failure of party leadership to develop viable candidates as real alternatives to the R's. What about that? As former executive director of the state Democratic Party, isn't that on you, Scott, that there isn't a deeper bench of Democrats here to challenge the Republican incumbent mayor?
Yes, I will take that on. We don't have a deep bench here, and we need to do better at that, I think, for Democrats. We should be running, and we've got some great, I think, candidates right now for city council across the city in a lot of the races in the at-large seats, Lisa King in particular, Darren Mason in particular. John Crescenbitty's running a great race for tax collector. So we've got to, as Democrats, do a better job of building our bench. And I think we've got some great candidates running citywide right now. And even for the legislature, we need to do better there. Tracy Polson's race in particular, I think, was a very strong one. And she's an example of Democrats doing so much better. So, yes, we've got to do a good job of building our bench. That's more of a generational problem as opposed to just this election. But I think we are making progress.
And what is that going to take? When you look at the fact that Florida is a purple state with more registered Democrats than Republicans, yet the Republican Party has maintained a stranglehold, really, on the legislature and the governor's mansion for over 20 years now. And your candidate, Andrew Gillum, almost won but didn't quite make the sale. Why can't Democrats in Florida more accurately reflect their numbers in when it comes to power?
Well, Melissa, the truth about politics, unfortunately, is that money plays a huge role in all of this. I think it was Mark Hanna that said there's two things important in politics, money, and I forgot the second one. The Republicans, as they have a hammerlock on Tallahassee for 25 years, control almost all the special interest money in the state. They literally get tens of millions of dollars from special interest here, large corporations, and that is very difficult to run against. I've done this now for a number of cycles in the state, and that's unfortunately a perpetuating circle that Democrats have to break, because as long as they have all the money, they're going to be very difficult to beat. Demographically, the state is rapidly becoming more diverse and rapidly becoming younger and thus more Democratic. So that's why I think you've got these two competing forces. You've got a state, I call it the 1% state. We always live. Andrew lost by 0.4%, which I will never forget. And Alex Sink just 8 years ago, lost by, I think it was 0.9. So we live in this kind of 1% out of 9 million votes cast. And that's one side has demographics, one side has money, and the two kind of collide.
We're speaking with Scott Arsenault, consultant to the Anna Brochet campaign and former executive director of the Florida Democratic Party. Here's an email for you from Joe. It seems columns in the Times Union have outlined Anna Brochet's lack of political courage, lack of transparency, and lack of leadership. As far as crime, she will be no different than the current mayor or any previous mayor. Okay, so what about that? The cynicism in this city that it doesn't matter who you vote for, we're going to continue to have these issues.
Well, I must have missed those columns in the Times Union, but I'll have to go back. That shows, I think, the cynicism with the current failed leadership of Mayor Curry. We've had 3.5 years now of hyper-partisan governance that's really ignored the needs of far too many neighborhoods in town. So I'm not surprised that people are turned off by government right now. And that's why Anna's campaign is so exciting to me. It is actually reaching out to both sides of the aisle. She is actually trying to get Democrats and Republicans to vote for her, not just one side. And that's what I hope will inspire people this election.
Now, there are a number of forums and scheduled debates coming up. Mm-hmm. Anna Brochet and other candidates running, Omega Allen, Jimmy Hill, two independents both running. They've all committed. As yet, Mayor Curry has not yet committed to appear at any of these forums, although we're waiting to see if he does. We've also invited him to appear on this program and talk about the mayor's race. Mm-hmm. The election is a month away, so there's a lot more to happen in the next several weeks. Scott Arsenault, we appreciate you being with us and sharing your thoughts. Thanks for joining the show.
Thank you for having me.
Still to come, musician Uno, how he's taking over the world from his bedroom here in Jacksonville. You won't believe it. Also coming up, our book club looks back at the glory days of NASA in Florida. That's next.
Jonathan Bolin was a star high school quarterback.
The first play, they hiked the ball to John. He went straight down the middle and scored a touchdown.
Then came the concussions and the consequences.
The slowness, the fog, you know, the stomach ache. You usually throw up after a concussion.
The blind side of school concussion rules on the next Reveal.
Saturday at 3 p.m. on 89.9 WJCT.
Hi, I'm Damian Lamar. Join me for Taste Test and broaden your musical palate as we redefine urban radio. Have a taste tonight at 11 on WJCT 89.9 FM. Your community, your world, your music.
Hi, I'm Melissa Ross.
And I'm Tom Hudson. Join us Friday for the Florida Roundup, where we talk about the biggest stories in the state.
From politics to education, the environment, and more. If it's news in Florida, we want to hear from you.
Let your voice be heard. Join the conversation on the Florida Roundup.
Fridays at noon on WJCT.
Support for Movable Feast is made possible by 927 Events, event venue and catering.
Welcome back. They are focused on creating a superlative customer service experience. The Women's Food Alliance Hospitality Social Expo is coming up, and it showcases the growing hospitality field here on the First Coast. In today's Movable Feast, Lee Court speaks with Sandy Galloway and Marsha Myers to learn more about hospitality etiquette training.
Sandy, why don't you give us a few hints about hospitality etiquette training that are on the docket coming up?
Well, we are going to talk about a lot of different things, Lee. We'll talk about dining, which is very important because so many employers today want to take a prospective employee out to lunch to check to see that they have good etiquette at the table. We'll talk about professional attire. We'll talk about proper handshakes, how to introduce people And the list goes on.
I know. It's endless. We're excited that we can custom design our training programs for our clients, whether they need a brush up for their front of the house staff for a day, or if they want to do a very broad program, and it could last a week with front of the house, back of the house, management training, communications, their sales people. Marcia, what are some of the hints that you're going to bring to our hospitality etiquette training coming up this month?
Well, one thing we know for certain is hiring the right person for the right job is extremely important,
yes,
and especially in hospitality venues. So that's one of the things that I will be working with. Also, how to meet and understand your customers' expectations. Expectations are huge, and so often we don't even know what they are. So we have to learn and figure out what those are so that we can provide the best experience a customer could have.
I think the combination of the two of you as the hands-on, intelligent, caring trainers of the service industry today is going to take hospitality etiquette training and just push it over the top. We're so proud of the growth of Jacksonville area today, which isn't just Jacksonville. It's our surrounding communities of Amelia Island, Orange Park, St. Augustine, even the Georgia coast. We're all in our destination. And we all travel, dine, many of us go and play golf and enjoy hospitality-type venues, things to do, where to go. So we know that we're going to really impact the level of guest service. We are having a Women's Food Alliance Hospitality Social Expo on February 26th. It's going to be at the Morocco Shrine. And the expo is going to feature a lot of our members of the Women's Food Alliance and what they do in their hospitality venues. But there's going to be an opportunity for our attendees to meet the two of you. And I will see you at the February expo.
Thank you.
Thank you, Lee.
Get your tickets now for the second annual Women's Food Alliance Hospitality Social Expo. It's next Tuesday, February 26, 4 to 7 p.m. at the Morocco Shrine Center on St. John's Bluff. Taste, sip, meet, and mingle, and learn more about careers in hospitality. Tickets at Eventbrite. We will be right back.
This is what teachers are saying about Teach.
I loved how engaging he was. My favorite part was definitely the breakout session. It was just so relevant to the things that we're experiencing today.
You must attend this conference. This is the best conference I think I've ever been to.
Join us on Saturday, March 2nd for a day filled to engage, empower, and inspire you. The day includes keynote presentation, breakout sessions, and so much more. Tickets are $35. Log on to wjct.org/teach for more information.
This book club segment is underwritten by San Marco Books and More.
Welcome back. Well, the early days of space exploration were heady times for America and for Florida, of course, where NASA has such a strong presence. The classic novel, The Right Stuff by Tom Wolfe, explores that amazing time, and it is our book club pick this month. Our facilitator, Stacy Goldring, is here now with a look inside The Right Stuff. Good morning.
Good morning.
And Stacy, you've brought along a special guest today. It's Greg Landworth. His family owned the Starlight Motel in Cocoa Beach, which is mentioned, of course, in the book, and it's where the Mercury 7 astronauts stayed during their training. Greg, good to have you.
Thank you. Good morning.
In a moment, we'll hear about Greg's actual real-life memories of Gus Grissom and, the other astronauts that were part of this amazing moment in American history. But first, why the right stuff this month? Why did we pick the right stuff?
We chose the right stuff because, unfortunately, over the summer, last summer, we Tom Wolfe passed away. Mm-hmm. And I felt it would be important for our book groups to have Tom Wolfe somehow under our belt in some fashion. And right stuff seemed like the logical choice because this summer we're celebrating the 50th anniversary of the moon landing.
That's right.
So we thought we'd tie into that. And we have had some absolutely wonderful discussions about the right stuff. Do you remember reading it or?
I read the book years ago, and I saw the movie that was made out of it, which was also great.
I just saw it last night. The right stuff. Tom Wolfe does something very interesting. It's a new form of journalism that we're reading when we read the book because he takes us behind the scenes, never done before.
Yeah, a novel, but written about real life events.
Right, right. Called New Journalism, yeah. Or nonfiction novel.
Exactly.
Whatever that means. Yeah.
And what's even cooler today is that we have Greg here in studio, mm-hmm. Greg Landworth. Your family owned the Starlight Hotel in Cocoa Beach. So you grew up around John Glenn, Alan Shepard, Gus Grissom, these world famous astronauts that stayed there while they were training. What are some of your memories of this time?
Well, it was really exciting in Cocoa Beach at the time. I was very little there. I was born there, but up until about 6 years old, they used to be great friends with my father, and they would joke around. They had a great time at the hotel, and sometimes my dad would bring them home to have dinner with us, and it was a great opportunity to meet all those folks.
Didn't you used to? Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Well, your dad was Henry Landworth, who just passed away, and I'm so sorry for your loss. He is famed as a Holocaust survivor who came to this country, founded an amazing charity, Dignity You Wear. But I don't think people knew. I don't think everybody knew that you had the. He also had this connection to the astronauts.
Yes, back in the old days, and he maintained that connection throughout his life, and. Actually, John Glenn was one of his business partners, and so we've been in touch with him and the family. He passed away a couple of years ago, I think. They've always been really close.
Can you tell us a few? I know they used to play a lot of shenanigans. Your father had a sense of humor. The astronauts had a sense of humor. Can you share some of the fun stories or an interesting anecdote that you remember? As a child?
One time, John Glenn had come back to his room after exercising, and the housekeeping hadn't been through and cleaned the room, so there were no clean towels for him. Mm-hmm. And he made a point. He came down to the front desk and was pounding on the desk and pretending to be angry that there were no towels in the room. And my dad came out. And said, "What's the matter, John?" He goes, "You know, there's no towels in the room." So they went and they got him some towels. John checked in to the hotel again a couple weeks later. And when he went to get in his room, he couldn't barely open the door. The room was filled with towels on the bed, in the bathroom, in the bathtub. And so those are the kind of
some hijinks went on, in other words. Mm-hmm. So they had a sense of fun.
A lot.
Yeah. And did they talk to you or just a little kid? Did they talk to you much?
Yes, they would still talk with us, and we would play with their kids. They would bring them down to the Cape, and I remember playing with Walter Cronkite's son, Chip, and John Glenn's kids and the Carpenter's kids.
Which is so amazing. So not only the astronauts, but also the journalists. And I know that your father had a very close relationship with Walter Cronkite. Can you talk about Walter Cronkite checking into the hotel when it was rather booked?
Yes. Walter, again, my dad was friendly with all of them. It was the only place for them to stay in Cocoa Beach. And so there were very few rooms. And sometimes my father would have to double people up. Strangers that didn't know each other, they would have to stay in the same room. They called him Double Up Henry. One time, Walter Cronkite came to stay, and he said, "I don't want a separate room. I want a separate room. I don't want to have to sleep with somebody." And so my dad checked him into into a broom closet with a rollaway bed.
Oh, no way.
Can you imagine?
Well, you know, it's amazing when you think about how in that era, the space program really was the thing in Cocoa Beach. That was it. People coming into Cocoa Beach, they were somehow involved one way or another mm-hmm. with the space program. So, you know, Greg, what do you think about where we are now with space exploration in this country?
I think we're a little bit remiss. I wish that we were still doing more exploration. I think the space station is a great place for them to work out of, but I was really disappointed that they got out of the business of sending astronauts into space. I'm excited with Elon Musk and some of his mm-hmm. Progress that he's making with the space program and being able to land his rockets on land and on a barge. Those are huge accomplishments from splashing down in the water with a parachute.
Sure. And, you know, I don't know if you guys are aware of this, but they're building a spaceport in Jacksonville out on the west side at Cecil Commerce Center. They want to do private space trips.
That's very exciting.
Which is exciting.
And who knows, we all heard last night on the news that Mark Kelly is now in the presidential race.
Running for Senate. Gabby Gifford's husband, Mark
That's
Kelly,
right.
is an astronaut and running. And so, you know, we think of the astronauts as these mythical figures.
Yes. Well,
but they were just guys in the end.
Yeah. And this book does a great job of going behind the scenes. And I don't know how much time we have left, but I would love for you, Greg, to share another story about your Sunday night dinners at your grandma's house and a little incident between you and Uncle John. Mm.
The astronauts and the different journalists, they would be invited over on Sundays. My grandmother was Italian, and between her and my mom, they would make these huge dinners, and the astronauts knew, and they always came over for dinner. A couple days before John Glenn's scheduled flight, he had come over, and we had dinner together, and the next morning, I woke up with the mumps.
Oh.
Highly contagious, and John Glenn hadn't had them yet.
Oh.
So I exposed him to the mumps, and as a consequence, the doctors had to follow him very closely the next couple of days, and if he had gotten a fever or contracted the mumps, he wouldn't have gone into
space.
No
Mercury 7.
Nope.
But luckily that didn't happen.
No.
This is even better than reading the book.
These
are the real stories.
You know, the book club that I run, I'm telling you, it's first class. I mean, Greg has been kind enough to come to a few of my groups, and we all love and root for America going into space. Everyone talks about where they were. I'm sure our listeners have driven down and gone to the launches, and it really is a profound experience.
It really is. And as you pointed out, with the passing of Tom Wolfe and the 50th mm-hmm. anniversary of NASA, now is a perfect time to pick up your pick for this month, Stacy, The Right Stuff by Tom Wolfe. Read the book. And thank you so much, Greg Landworth of Jacksonville, for sharing your memories of the Mercury 7 astronauts. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you for inviting me.
A quick break, and in a moment, he's been called the hottest new musician in the world. You know, making amazing music from his bedroom in Arlington. Yeah. We'll listen right after this.
Calling all teachers. Wes Moore, the CEO of Robinhood, one of the largest anti-poverty forces in the nation, best-selling author, a combat veteran, and a social entrepreneur, will be one of the keynote speakers at this year's Teach Conference, a day to engage, empower, and inspire. Saturday, March 2nd at the Hyatt Hotel. Attendees will enjoy breakfast, lunch, a swag bag, and so much more. Information at wjct.org/teach.
I'm Marco Werman. Imagine PBS was taken over by the White House. Far-fetched maybe, but in Hungary, Public TV answers directly to political leaders.
They turned the public service broadcaster into state media, basically.
Other popular Hungarian radio, TV, and internet sites were bought up.
Through people that have close ties to the government.
Independent media hijacked in Hungary, only on The World. This afternoon at 3 on 89.9 WJCT.
There's the immigration debate, and then there's shopping.
The bridge goes right into the outlets. There's also a ramp that comes down from I-35 that really kind of goes right into the outlets. So yeah, it's very accessible.
I'm Kai Rizdal, American Stores and Mexican Shoppers. Next time on Marketplace.
Weeknights at 6 on 89.9 WJCT.
Let's go through this one more time.
My name is Peter B. Parker. For the last 22 years, I thought I was the one and only Spider-Man.
It's an animated hit like none other, both for its design and for its unique story. The producer, writer, and director of the Oscar-nominated Spider-Man. Next time on 1A. Today at 11 on 89.9 WJCT.
Welcome back. Well, finally this hour, he's been called the hottest new musician in the world. Yuno, whose new EP, Moody, is getting attention all over the country and is topping playlists everywhere, will open for Matt and Kim Friday at the St. Augustine Amphitheater. His lead single, No Going Back, has been played more than 2 million times on Spotify since it dropped last year. I recently spoke to Yuno about Jacksonville, his music, and his upcoming show.
Yuno, thanks for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
You've become this wildly successful musician that a lot of people in Jacksonville still don't know about. Let's talk about the fact that you've really blown up on Spotify and in the music business, basically recording out of your bedroom in Jacksonville. Yeah. How did this happen?
I've just been sitting at home for years working on music. I tried to start bands when I was younger, but it never really worked out. We'd never have a practice, but we'd have a logo and a list of influences and everything. And eventually I just started like making music and posting it online. And Ish from Shabazz Palaces and Digable Planets, he is an A&R at Sub Pop, and he was just browsing on SoundCloud looking for some music and found me and showed it to the rest of the people at Sub Pop and ended up on Sub Pop.
How did you teach yourself to compose and perform music? You're self-taught, right?
Yeah. I guess it was just generally just a lot of practice, trial and error. When I started playing guitar, I went to guitar lessons for maybe 2 weeks and then just ended up quitting because I just didn't like learning in that sort of environment, and then taught myself and looked up guitar tabs online, and I'd show my friends like songs that I learned, and they'd showed me songs that they learned, and we'd just go back and forth, and it was just a way for me to kind of learn. And then I just started trying to make music and making funny rap songs for my friends and just making music over time to try to get better at it.
Are you an introvert? You do a lot of this just in your room at home.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I've definitely, like, I guess I'm kind of naturally an introvert, but I've been more like extroverted just going on tour and meeting new people and traveling more. And stuff, I've gotten out of the house a lot more. So now it's strange being back home and being cooped up in my room again because I got used to it for so many years.
Where did you grow up in Jacksonville? What neighborhood?
Arlington.
Are you still there?
Yeah, I'm still there.
Okay. What's it like for you now that you're starting to become a little more well-known?
It's pretty much the same.
Still the same.
Yeah. I went on my first like Jacksonville outing to go see this band Sea Cycles that a lot of my live band is in. And it was cool meeting some people at the show that had heard my music but never met me in person because I never really go out in Jacksonville. So that was like a nice kind of new experience.
You did go out long enough to make a video at the Regency Square Mall that's gotten a lot of play. Tell me about that process.
Basically, I just needed to make a music video, and I was making videos for school projects before I ever made music. And I just got my cousin to help me out and like drive me around the parking lot. And it was like a place that I thought was cool looking and very empty, and place I grew up going to a lot. So filmed a lot of it there and then filmed some of it in New York.
That is what is so amazing about our digital world now. Someone who's really talented, such as yourself, can really blow up right from their own bedroom just with the tools that you have at your fingertips. You can teach yourself basically how to play an instrument by looking at what's online. Yeah. You can make your own video. We don't have to move to New York or LA anymore to kind of make it in these worlds.
Yeah,
and I think
true.
You're a good example of that.
Thank you.
It's kind of crazy, isn't it?
Yeah, it's been like a whole interesting process, just kind of being in my room, like locked away, creating things for all these years. And then now getting to go to like random countries in Europe and playing shows for people that listen to my music that like I didn't know there were people in this country or in this city listening to me. And yeah, that's been like a whole...
And they're fans. Yeah.
Yeah,
been, well, tell us about the album Moody and what influences would you say we'll hear on this album? What musical influences?
Musically, I'd say it's mostly hip hop, even though a lot of people don't hear the same thing. Like one of my songs, No Going Back, has a lot of influence from like Jay-Z and this rapper Scarface, and like it's kind of like Hard Knock Life piano type of feel, and a lot of boom bap drums, and other songs there's some 808s, but then there's also like heavy guitars, and there's some dancehall stuff in some songs, R&B and other songs, kind of a mixture of a lot of things that I like to listen to.
Let's listen now to No Going Back from Uno, and go catch his show Friday in St. Augustine. I'm Melissa Ross. Thanks for being with us. We'll be back at 9 a.m. tomorrow. Enjoy the music.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.